and welcome to episode 212 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and I'm here with the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man some people know as Jimmy Jangles.
It's Jimmy Jangles.
Mr. Tony Esmond.
Fucking hell. I'm going to have to do a comic called Jimmy Jangles, aren't I?
Yeah, you are.
Fit into Kung Fu, wouldn't he? He'd be the mastermind.
Yeah.
Jimmy Jangles.
Jimmy Jangles. He does sound like one of your characters, to be honest.
Yeah. Like it.
Hello, everyone.
We just had a great chat, didn't we?
Yes.
An amazing chat, yeah.
Yes, we are very, we're looking forward to seeing what you people think of this week's show, and because we've been talking with Zee-Chun of TKO Studios.
Yep. And dare I say, one of the most inspiring interviews we've done, like, not because of our stupid interviewing style, but completely, the enthusiasm from that geezer, you know what I mean?
Good. Yeah.
Good and stuff. His knowledge, he sort of had a firm grip of what he was doing, what the game plan was, and just sticking to it. It's admirable, really good.
Yep. We've had a bit of a track record of really getting into like publishers and getting some communication with them, having someone on the show, and then just becoming an even bigger fan of the publisher afterwards. Yeah. And this is one of those shows. So that'll be coming up very soon. But other than that, how is everyone?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm all right.
Good.
Yeah. I'm in my last week of being a sick bloke before I go back to work.
You mean like sick as in like cool, yeah?
Is that what they say now?
I don't know. Yeah.
Tony's perennially cool.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I watch The Voice Kids. That's how cool I am.
Oh, no, Tony.
No, I've never watched that.
I didn't even know that existed.
No. Me neither. Me neither. But we're back this week with a guest to talk about some comics. And do you know where else you can get your comics?
I almost said that.
Yeah, I should have let you say it. We should prep these things. We should really do some hard work. And we'll never
Do script for that shit advert we did.
Yeah, that turned out all right.
It turned out all right. Yeah.
It was right. People have played that a couple of times.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy just to pre-record the same advert and then.
No.
Drop in.
Well, of course you would, because you don't edit the show.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess this way is easier. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
This is less work, so let's do this.
It's less work. Yeah, it's less work, but it's easy work reading comics on Comic House.
Oh.
Yes.
Like, I sent you a picture earlier saying I'm aroused. I feel the same again.
Yeah, but your face was... It didn't really match up with what you were saying.
Glad it was just the face.
I drew a face on it.
It was a good drawing.
Yeah. If Comic House, Pete, if you and the guys are listening, we're sorry about this. but our lovely listeners know that Comic House helped sponsor this little show, and they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. They are fighting the good fight in the name of indie comics, especially in the UK, but also and beyond, because there's lots of people from all over the world putting their work on there now. On the website, if you've got print copies, there's a huge selection of titles on the database already, but you can list your book on there for free and start selling straight away, which is brilliant. They only take like a penny commission, so it's another way of selling your books. But we've been harping on about it all the time, and we read it all the time, and it's awesome. And that's the Comic House app, which we all subscribe to. We all read, and it's amazing. And they're adding titles all the time. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got the featured new additions this week include Family Capital Issue 1, Mary Queen of Scots, Gallow Men Volume 1 Issue 1, Lost in Time 3, Gorky and Izzy's Trip to Mexico, and a bumper week for Mad Robot Comics, Frank at Home on the Farm, and Cadavers, World Gone to Hell.
Oh,
read
nice.
These and 100 more, hundreds of more indie titles right now.
Brilliant. I've heard a lot of good buzz about that Frank at Home on the Farm. That looks really good.
Somebody posted on the Facebook page, didn't they, saying they'd just seen it and it was good. I must read it, actually.
Yeah. And we can, because we've got the app and you should get it too. It's like Netflix for comics.
Sorry. I just turned the app on. An advert came up on the app, sorry. There was some lady talking to me. It wasn't me webcamming again.
Well, are you sure?
No, not really.
There you go. You heard it here first. But yeah, Comic House, it's like Netflix for comics. For only £3 a month, you get access to all those titles that Dan mentioned and everything else that's on there, including lots of our past guest work, probably future guests, and ourselves as well. But it's amazing value. I mean, that's the price of a comic that you'd probably go into your shop, pick up, and then 2 minutes later, you've read it and just thought, what a waste of £3. There you go. I fired that shot. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. Yeah. Come at me. No, please don't. But yeah, so there is a 14-day free trial and you get access to all those comics, and we highly suggest you do. So go to comichouse.com to find out more.
Don't come at him.
I can quite easily edit that joke out, Tony, so you better watch what
you say. You won't, though. Fucking liar.
I tell you what isn't a lie, though, and that is this week's guest and interview is an absolute blinder. Be prepared to be converted to finding one of your new favourite publishers, in all seriousness. I mean, we were already in the cult already, weren't we? We were we were already convinced. But this interview that's coming up now with Zee Chun, who was an absolute legend, as we said, and talks a lot about the books and what's coming up for TKO. So we might as well just stop the waffle. Well, I'll stop waffling and just put the interview in now, shall I?
Yeah, go on.
Go for it.
Yeah, why not? Right, this week we are very pleased to be joined by someone who not only has written amazing titles such as Seven Deadly Sins and The Fearsome Dr. Fang, what a title that is, but he's also the co-founder and publisher behind the awesome TKO Studios. It's our pleasure to welcome Zee Chun to the show. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hey, this is great. We've been looking forward to this for a while, dude.
We have been. This one has been in the pipeline for a little while. Firstly, it was a case of like, wow, this new indie publisher sounds interesting. We'd like to find out more. But then we actually started reading the books and it became, we have to talk to these people.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. So I think it's best just to kick us off straight away. So tell us a little bit more about TKO Studios and how it all came to be.
We launched in December. We are a new comic book publisher, and we do things differently than other companies. So we binge release our books. So all four of our first miniseries, which were six issues each, were all released at the same time. We also released the books in multiple formats. So we released them as six issues in a collector's box set, trade paperback and digital right off the bat. And we also provided all of our first issues for free to read off of our website, tkopresents.com. And we're doing that because both me and my co-founder come from outside of the comic book space, but have always been fans. And we just want to see what a kind of modernized version of a comic book company was, how we could bring in new readers and how we could kind of change up the way that people perceive how comics are read and distributed and consumed.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, so you say you come from outside the comic. You're a TV normally, is it from a business point of view? Is that right? Or?
So I come from a film and TV background. I came up through independent film. I had a short film in Sundance in 07, and then I followed it up with a feature in 09. And then I kind of transitioned into doing more television. So I wrote on a show called Once Upon a Time, which is for ABC. And then I was on Gotham for the last 3 years. And now I'm show running a Gremlins animated prequel.
Yes, that was the recent news that came out.
I actually couldn't talk about it for such a long time because it was all under wraps. And then recently they announced it. So it was nice to actually be able to, you know, like, what are you working on? It's like, oh, I can't tell you. I'm just gonna like go into work every day and not be able to tell everyone. Like I work for some I work for Treadstone or something.
But Dave, I couldn't mind you working on this Gremlins thing. Have you not ever thought this has got to be a comic? I mean, Gremlins has got to be a comic at some point. Come on.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be plans for because it's also Warner Brothers, so they have relationships with comic book companies, obviously. And then my co-founder, Sal Simeone, I've known him for over 20 years. He comes from the tech industry, software industry. He has a company called Seasoft, which he founded in the 80s. He's had a lot of different startups in the past. And he really, when we were first starting out, he was really like a friend and mentor to me. And we've always wanted to work together on something. And TKO kind of came out of that, our love for comics and wanting to try something different in the comic publishing space. And then we very quickly brought on Sebastian Gerner, who's our editor-in-chief, and our head of creator outreach, Cara McKinney.
I have to say, from listening to, sorry to interrupt, V, but I was to say, from reading your tweets and stuff, man, you do love comics. Yeah. Comics is like the big thing for you, isn't it?
Well, you know, comic books were my first love. You know, they were, I don't think that I would have become a filmmaker if I hadn't started getting into comics first. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a comic book writer, a comic book artist. And so I grew up in the, you know, the early 90s, reading a lot of comic books, and that's really what I thought I was going to do. And it was around the time that, you know, Image was coming up. We were seeing creators really take control of their own destiny, and it was just a really interesting time. I also think that, you know, seeing creators like Jim Lee and Will Sportacio, seeing Asian faces creating artwork, that was really new to me, and I hadn't really experienced that in other media. So
I think because they were such TV stars as well, weren't they? You know, the guys like Ernie Chan and stuff like that, we knew they were there, but, you know, Jim Lee and Will Sportacio, they were in your face. They were at signings every week and on YouTube, and, you know, not YouTube, but on MTV and stuff like that, weren't they, you know?
And you open up Wizard magazine and it's holy shit, like, these guys are, you know, they would have like the top 10 writers, the top 10 artists and stuff. And I remember just seeing those faces and being like, wow, this is really, there's such recognition going on here.
Once they got into that top 10 list of Wizard, I remember every month, and there would pretty much be the same 10 for almost a year. Then occasionally a new face would pop up and you'd be like, oh, what are they doing?
it was both like consistent and then like also like wildly inconsistent. Like, how did this person go from being like the number one artist on the planet to like the fourth best artist on the planet next month?
Who decides?
What sort of titles
were you digging as you were
back in the day? It was it's kind of nerdy, but I used to love the Marvel Encyclopedia,
Guide to the Marvel Universe.
Guide to the Marvel Universe. And I think part of it was just like, wow, this is really like a built out universe with so much backstory and so much history to it. And then the Claremont Byrne X-Men run was really, I think X-Men growing up, that was kind of my jam. And then started getting into really following writers as opposed to titles. So Frank Miller, Alan Moore, and then I started getting into some of the weirder like indie press stuff. When I was a kid, I actually met Frank Miller, which was like incredible. I had a copy of Sin City. I guess I was probably like 13 or 14, and he was signing at the Million Year Picnic in Cambridge. And so my mom brought me, and I brought like my portfolio. And he was like so nice. He like, I finally get to the front of the line.
Yeah.
And like, he like critiques my artwork. He was like really kind about it. And then as I'm leaving, he like pulls my mom aside and is like, you know, he really shouldn't be reading Sin City. He's like way too young. So Frank Miller totally narked on me. But I still loved him.
Did you find that reading those people sort of informed the way that you write? I mean, when you moved into like TV and all of that stuff, you know, can you see those influences sometimes in what you write and how you write?
Absolutely. I mean, when I first started out, you know, I still did all of my own storyboards as well. And so, and that kind of came out of reading comics and trying to tell a story visually. And
that must be such an advantage to like have that sort of knowledge of how to tell a story like that, you know, from a comics background. It almost becomes part of your brain, doesn't it? That sort of narrative storytelling like that.
Images.
And you're telling it via images. And I think, you know, one of the frustrations that I've always had with especially network television is that everything needs to be spoken out loud, because you're just the rule of thumb, and when I found this out, it was like kind of like my heart kind of fell a little bit, but it was basically, you know, you have to write network television so that if someone's not looking at the screen and they're like doing laundry or doing dishes, they can still understand what's going on. And so that was kind of hard for me early on. I think you have a little bit more flexibility in the cable space, where you can, you know, have more things feel a little bit more sophisticated and more things that are left unsaid. But I think that that was one of the great things about, you know, when I actually went back to writing comics, and I had been working in network TV for the last 5 years, what was really freeing about it was, you know, you'd write the script and you'd see the pages come in, and you realized how little dialogue you actually needed to get things across, because it's such a visual medium. And I found that I was cutting, you know, a third of the dialogue on the page in those first couple issues.
Have to, I mean, because writing a comic script is quite different to writing TV or movies or whatever. Did you almost have to sort of relearn a bit, or did you, were there any sort of processes from either that you could juggle?
Well, Sebastian Gerner, our editor-in-chief, you know, he was, he's edited a lot of Image's top books. He was at Marvel for a number of years. And so when we first started working together, he was really helpful in kind of breaking down some of the differences. And I mean, the main thing was just teaching myself that like one panel could really only have one action in it, and then trying to strip out as much of the dialogue and compress what
that
was going
that
on.
That one action thing is where storyboards differ, isn't it, a lot of the time? So you can show an action in a storyboard, but not really so much in a comic panel.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that was the thing, like, you know, Sebastian was very kind early on to just be like, to call me and be like, well, he can't really punch this guy in the face, jump out the window, and, you know, crash into a car in this one panel. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
So you always, when you decided, I want to make comics, which anyone who's listening to this show has had that feeling, and then you decide, okay, I'm going to start like a new imprint, do something a bit different. Did you always think, you know, because a lot of publishers start with just one title rather than coming out with a couple at a time, whereas you've come out of the gate with a few very different titles, something, you know, a flavor for everyone.
It's not like a lot of people think, oh, I'll do a universe and have all these linked characters, but you've gone away from that, haven't you? It's almost there's a Vertigo feel to it in a way, I suppose.
Yeah,
you know
we wanted to be really curated. We wanted to make sure that we were only doing books that we felt really strongly about, and we also didn't want to do so many books that we wanted to do the number of books where we felt we could market and push the books out there. And we didn't want, you know, that's our commitment to our creators, and so we didn't want to take on too much. But at the same time, you know, we wanted, I mean, I lived through the kind of the Image bust in the 90s, and I remember that excitement. And then when books started shipping late, and I remember feeling it as a fan and feeling very disappointed. And so as we moved into creating our business plan, so much of what we were doing was to just try to assure the readership that we were here to stay. And part of it was, you know, you don't have to worry about whether or not this company is going to exist in 6 months and whether this arc will be finished, because the arc is already done. And so a lot of that was really trying to create a new company where the audience and the readership could trust us, and the creators could trust that we were gonna, you know, finish out their series.
Yeah, and you've done like the genius, you know, it's a simple sort of genius act of like having the first issue free. You know, you're drug dealers essentially. You know, the first one's free, and then just like that, we want the rest of it. You know, because then but then, you know, the pressure is all on you guys in a sense, because the first issue is the one that will get them buying the rest, isn't it? So you must have so much confidence to do something like that, you know, in your titles. And it works, because we've read the book.
We've read them all.
Go about approaching the creators that you wanted, you kind of targeted people and went after them, or did you put a general call out asking for creatives?
We really went through, you know, Sebastian had worked in comics for a long time, and so we kind of went through and just looked at who we thought made sense for this type of model. We were really looking for creators who could tell a self-contained story and do it as like a kind of character-driven genre story, where it's a new way into a specific genre. So Josh Dysart and Alberto Ponticelli in the first wave with Goodnight Paradise, you know, we had seen their work on Unknown Soldier, which is, you know, I think one of the stranger superhero comics out there, but it has like a real tie to things that are happening in the world. And when they pitched us Goodnight Paradise, which is a murder mystery set in the homeless population of Venice, California, We said, well, we really believe in this creative team. We believe that they can do this. And you know, that was kind of how we approached all of it. You know, Sebastian had known Garth from his days editing at Marvel. And then it was a lot of like cold calls. You know, we probably reached out to 50 or 60 people, which is hard in the comic book space. You know, it was like sometimes phone calls or like walking up to people at conventions and being like, hey, you guys don't know me. I don't work in the comic book space, and there's no evidence that our company exists online, but you want to come work for us for a year?
You want to come to my hotel room?
Yeah, literally. Just take it on faith that we'll exist, and you can spend a year working on one of our books. So we were really lucky in that. You know, I think that as we started doing these calls, the thing that, literally walking up to people at conventions, what we found was because we wanted to do things differently, and because we had such a clear game plan about how we were going to do that, in the comic book space, you know, no one's in comic books because they want to get, you know, filthy rich. They do it because they love the art form. And everybody just wants the art form to succeed. And so I think as we were pitching the company, what people really responded to was the fact that we had like a real point of view about how we were going to try to modernize the way that comics reach audiences, and that we're trying something new. I mean, that was really the biggest selling point for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Garth Ennis kills it on that, man. Oh. Yeah, that was a great choice.
Yeah.
I mean, did you say to him, what do you want to do? What sort of book? I know he's a big war fan anyway, isn't he? You know, a big sort of wartime comics fan anyway. Mm. But did you say you wanted something in that vibe, or did he say to you, well, I've got this story about a sniper, or, you know?
We had dinner one night, and he was like, well, this is something that I've been working on. And he just pitched us the story. Yeah. I mean, it was just so compelling right off the bat. I mean, he just...
so well-researched as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That really makes it.
Yeah.
His pitch, and he's so compelling when he's talking about it because he knows so much about that world. And so it's actually funny. Our editor-in-chief is... his family is German, and... Garth, I think, asked, like, oh, well, what unit was your grandfather in? Right. And Sebastian knew the unit number, and Garth was like, oh, well, then at this time of year, they would have been in this part of the country. And, like, he has his house completely blown away.
Oh, man, that's why we love him so much. Yeah. That's why he's such a good writer. He's
professional.
Puts the work in.
Yeah.
And Steve Epting and Elizabeth Wrightweiser on art. Why? I put a tweet out today. Why is that not winning every award?
Yeah.
You know, genuinely.
And
so we brought Steve to Stephen Betty to Garth. That project came in with just Garth, and then you know we put a lot of artists in front of him, and Steve absolutely was, you know, rose to the top of his wish list. And
it's
so,
a match made in heaven.
Right. He does great women as well, Epting, doesn't he? What was the image book he did about the female spy?
Oh, Velvet.
They're so good, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So beautiful.
Beautiful stuff.
Yeah. And like, I mean, that there was a reason that was one of the recommendations on this show.
What was the thing? I forgot about that.
I mean, because I actually just devoured that in a night, and it's one of those, you know, a Garth Ennis has a certain following, shall we say? So to have a Garth Ennis book on your first line.
You know you're serious then, don't you? The fans know you're a serious deal then, don't they? You know.
Yeah.
So. We knew that we needed to kind of make a splash, and that's why we also, you know, when we announced, we also had the second wave of books waiting in the wings that were already being worked on. So we have the first ever Jeff Lemire, Gabriel Walta collaboration.
Ming Doyle, yeah.
Ming Doyle and Roxane Gay. We have an Andy Ballinger book. And we have like a really cool survival horror book as well.
Yeah. So should we mention the first run then? So your first wave is Sarah, Seven Deadly Sins, Fearsome Dr. Fan and Fang and Goodnight Paradise. So they're your four out the gate cracking books. But I think you're being a bit modest there, Z. You wrote Seven Deadly Sins, and it is
that's right. Yeah.
One of my favorite things, man. I was telling you before we came on, I bought a page of Artem.
Oh, thank you.
I bought the stabs him in the eye page, which is just
awesome.
Genius. Trakanoff is a beast, man.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that we did when we were reaching out to people was you know, there's a lot of artists who don't really fall into the style of the big two. But there's, you know, fantastic artists. And I think that RTM has such a specific style. And also, because he's so detailed, it does take him a certain amount of time to do his books. And so, you know, one of the things that about this model, the binge release model, is, you know, does an artist do their best work when they have to do 22 pages in 4 weeks? Like, we don't think so. And so, you know, we give the artist a little more time, you know, and I think that that shows in the artwork. You know, Steve has had more time to do each one of the issues of Sarah than he's ever had, I think.
I'll tell you what, you put Fighting in the Snow in any book, I'm going to buy it. I'll tell you now. It's just so beautiful the way it's done. And that, the when there's a lot of blood in it as well. There's a lot of blood in that book. But the way the blood plays against the white uniforms and stuff like that, it's just so well done, you know. Just amazing. It just really does need to be seen.
Yeah. And I think that the art through all of the line is just immediately impressive anyway. I mean, Dan McDade on Fearsome Dr. Fang.
Yes. So ripe for it.
So little winky. He's got that. It's not comedy, but it's brutal. It's a combination of both, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think for Dan, you know, you can really tell when he's having fun on a book, you know, and it was a really fun experience working with him on it.
That whole book's a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, what's that? Oh, no, he's back, and it's great.
It's proper pulp storytelling. Those classic. It reminded me of those classic sort of serial, those radio serials. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, where things were happening. Nailed it.
Shadow or something like that. Yeah.
And me and my co-writer on that book, Mike Weiss, you know, we're big fans of like Indiana Jones, and you know, we wanted to tell kind of a modern take on the kind of Yellow Peril Fu Manchu storylines.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
I mean, for those, we're talking about how much we love these books, and some of our listeners might be like, "Well, I haven't heard much of TKO." I mean, shame on them if they haven't. so just give us a brief little rundown of what the first wave one is that they can get stuck into now.
If you can check us out at tkopresents.com, there's more information. But the first wave of books is they're all 6-issue miniseries. The first one is Sarah by Garth Ennis, Steve Epting, and Elizabeth Brett Weiser. And that is about Russian female snipers on the Eastern Front during World War II. It's inspired by true events. And it's it really just follows a squad of female snipers as they go through this one military operation.
Yeah.
Then there's Seven Deadly Sins, which is a Western, but we like to think of it as kind of unlike any Western you've seen before.
It's the most grueling spaghetti Western ever watched.
It's pretty bloody. It's brutal. There's kind of flashbacks in it where you kind of get a taste of the stories that you may not have seen in like Gunsmoke or Bonanza. But it's about a group of death row criminals who go on a suicide mission into Comanche territory.
You got to love those band of like mismatched people. I watched this, I read this, and then I went and watched Deadwood the movie, you know, the real
awesome,
and I thought that's just like the perfect evening for me. It's like
Well, I like the idea that you know, that script actually was what got me my job on Gotham. You know, Gotham, there's bad guys, but they kind of play as good guys. You know, Penguin and the Riddler, they're such fan favorites. And you know, for me, it was really fun to be able to write a Western where the good guys are bad, but the quote unquote good guys are even worse. And so by virtue of that, they kind of are, it's, you know, they're all kind of morally reprehensible, but at the same time, you kind of love the bad guys. Then there's the Fearsome Dr. Fang, which is takes place in early 1900s in San Francisco and China, and it's this kind of globe-trotting action-adventure story which turns the Fu Manchu mythology on its head. So it's a San Francisco street cop and a treasure hunter, and the two of them join forces with this criminal mastermind, the Fearsome Dr. Fang, who ends up being actually a good guy who is pretending to be a bad guy in order to infiltrate the black market. So it's taking the kind of Fu Manchu Chinese bad guy stereotype and kind of flipping it on its head.
Yeah, I remember from issue one that there was that sort of flip, and like it was totally one of those. It lures you into thinking, oh, this is a standard sort of trope, but that simple twist is like, okay, I'm fully in now. Where is this going to go?
And that's an assault on the eyeballs as well, that kind of dude. It's the nicest possible way. It's just like goes mental, isn't it? You know?
It's crazy. I mean, I remember because there's a set piece in the first issue where my co-writer and I, we always wanted to have a chase through the great San Francisco earthquake. And the colors came in and it was just like so on fire. Like, it was so red and purple. And I remember being like, are we really doing this? And they were like, let's just do it. Let's make this look as crazy as possible.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah.
And Daniela Miwa did the colors on that. She's been fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Give her an award, for God's sake. Yeah.
And then the last book in our first wave is Goodnight Paradise. And that is a really heart-wrenching story about a murder that happens in the homeless population in Venice, California, and downtown Los Angeles. It's kind of like an ensemble, but it's told through the eyes of a homeless man who discovers the body of a teenage runaway and realizes he may be the only person who cares enough to solve her murder. Okay. And, you know, Josh Dysart lived in Venice for, it's funny, it's the story is really about gentrification and the people who are kind of left to the side when a neighborhood gentrifies. And
say, man,
Josh,
I was in LA for the first time ever. I went there a couple of months ago for the NCS festival at Huntington Beach, and we stayed in LA for a couple of days. Man, you got a homeless problem there, I tell you.
Yes,
homeless in there, you know.
It's really intense. I mean, there's times where I think that there were years where the homeless population in downtown Los Angeles outnumbered the actual population in certain neighborhoods.
Dear me.
And what I found so beautiful about this book was that, you know, Josh based the main character off of a man who essentially lived in the alleyway next to his apartment in Venice.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And became friends with him. And he really got to know the other homeless people who lived in the neighborhood. And so there's the feeling when you're reading the book that you're really experiencing it from the point of view of the people that are left in the margins of society. And Josh was actually evicted while writing this because the building owner wanted to raise the rents I think he was actually evicted by a snap, like something with Snapchat. So, Alberto Ponticelli came to Venice. They took like thousands of photos. And Josh, you know, he really built up this world. I was really, I can't say enough about this story.
And that's the thing about like something like you're talking about a specific place and a specific look and a specific feel and an atmosphere. You know, so it's imperative for those sort of stories that you get the look right. You get certain alleyways, certain streets.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, for us people in England, we may not know that, you know, this street sign is at a certain place in Venice Beach, but you know, people from LA, they're going to know exactly where it'll put them right there, won't it? As soon as they see.
I'll tell you what, us people who live in London, we've suffered for years under comics. Especially Claremont, who pretends to be English. If you ever talk to him, he's got this weird accent that you put on. But if Marvel, Bronze Age Marvel comics would be to be believed, you could drive from London to Edinburgh in an hour and a half.
I mean, you can see from that lineup that it's you know, such a diverse like set of flavors there, isn't it, for each one.
So we've tried to make it so that, you know, so one of the mandates creatively is that we don't do any superhero comics. And that's not a knock on superhero comics. Like, I love superhero comics. It's just that that readership is so well served by the big two. And so what we really are looking for is kind of new ways into established genres. So, and that can push pretty far. So Goodnight Paradise has the bones of a murder mystery, but I had never seen a murder mystery with this backdrop and this point of view. And so that's really what we're looking for, is something that has a new character driven way into a certain story. And we like to have the slates be very diverse. In the second slate, we have a sci-fi story, a survival horror story, an MMA thriller that takes place on the border. And we have an intergenerational heist story that takes place in Chicago.
Can you talk more about what the details of those books are?
Totally.
Can you pre-order them? They're on the website at the moment, aren't they?
They're on the website. You can pre-order them. They're going to come out September, October of this year, okay. So relatively soon.
Nice. Yeah.
So there's Sentient, which is the first ever Jeff Lemire, Gabriel Walta collaboration.
Nice.
Jeff did Black Hammer, and Gabriel Walta did Vision. And this is the first time they've worked together. And Gabe is actually hand painting every panel, which is crazy. So it looks it's funny because he had all this work on Twitter that I remember seeing the colors and being like, these are incredible. Like, it's a mixture of gouache and watercolor. And I was like, Gabriel, who colored you on these? And he was like, oh, I did. I just can't do it on any of my Marvel books because I don't have the time to do it. Yeah, so we're like, let's give you 2 months.
He was the artist for The Vision, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right.
So that is a sci-fi story. It takes place on a ship. And there's a kind of like an incident on the ship where all the adults are killed and only the kids are left. And it's almost like a reverse 2001, where there's an AI on the ship who is tasked with keeping these kids alive, but over the course of the series, it turns into kind of a maternal figure. So it's an AI who has to try to learn to be a mother to these kids.
Nice.
And Jeff was one of the first people that I wanted to reach out to, just because his work on Sweet Tooth. Sweet Tooth is one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
And everything I find with Jeff's stuff as well, there's an emotional heart. He's just one of the...
Yeah.
I mean, I will call him an indie legend, because he truly is, but something like the underwater welder is just...
Yeah.
That just floors
Essex
you.
Essex County.
Yeah.
So that's why we wanted... I mean, for this particular story especially, there's kids in it. There's this emotional bond. It's really about family. And we just knew that Jeff was like that. Mm. I mean, to be able to tell that type of emotional story. First of all, we were just excited to work with Jeff on anything. Then there's the first ever Roxane Gay, Ming Doyle collaboration. That's called The Banks. It's colored by Jordi Belair, lettered by Ariana Maher. And that is three generations of women in Chicago who... are master thieves, and they have to work together to pull off their greatest heist while also repairing their relationship. And that one is, I mean, it's beautiful. Ming and Jordi it's just such a great team up, as you can see from The Kitchen, which was their last book together.
Love that series. I'm so glad that it's getting more traction. It's a great series. I remember reading that in monthlies. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Then we have Pound for Pound, which is written by a TV writer, my friend Natalie Chaidez, who is the showrunner on Queen of the South. Andy Bollinger, who from Southern Cross, is doing the artwork for that. Nice. And Danielle Amiwa, who did the colors on Fearsome Dr. Fang, is coloring that one. And that is a MMA thriller. It's a female MMA fighter. And I'll just tell you about the opening scene, which is like my favorite, which is... it's about a female MMA fighter who fights in these kind of cage matches, and she's prone to blackouts. And so the opening scene, she wakes up in the ring. She doesn't really remember how she got there. And there's an opponent coming at her, and she just does what she always does, which is like beat the shit out of this opponent. She wins the fight, but that's when she remembers that actually she was supposed to throw the fight because her little sister is... actually captured by the local gangster. And so it's like a kind of like a new twist on this kind of like boxer noir thriller where she has to kind of tear a bloody path through Texas Mexican border.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah.
It's funny because Natalie, the writer, is a roller derby person, and Andy Bollinger, the artist, is actually a professional wrestler. And so the two of them together, it's a really
don't be rude to them.
Basically, you've just got to tell them how good the book is, otherwise they might suplex you and then run over you.
You get bodied.
And then the fourth book is a really cool survival horror thriller, and it's a survival horror comic called Eve of Extinction. And that one is written by Steven and Salvatore Simeone, drawn by Nick Varela and Isaac Goodhart, and colored by Ruth Redmond, and also lettered by Ariana Maher. And that is a story of a parasite that only affects men and turns them into monsters. And it's about these two moms, a mom and a stepmom, who have to save their daughter during this epidemic.
Okay. All men are evil. Yeah, I know some women who believe that for many years.
Don't bring up your wife again, Tony. But once again, you've got another selection of diverse sort of stories there.
Yeah.
That, you know, completely different from what came before in Wave One. And I love that, you know, there's something different. I mean, I just from those descriptions, I know listeners, and I know I certainly have, immediately picked the first one I'm going to read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We want to have something for everyone in each wave. Mm. And what we're finding is, you know, because we can see who's buying the books via our e-commerce stuff. But basically, we've been surprised. You know, a lot of people buy at least two of the books to begin with, and then we find them coming back because I think that they're responding to the, you know, the quality of the stories and the quality of the artwork. And and it's also that the books themselves are actually a little oversized. They're about an inch and a half taller.
They're slightly smaller than magazine size, aren't they?
They're the same aspect ratio as a comic book. They're just bigger. And so we felt like, I mean, the artists spend so much time. They spend, you know, a year doing these books. We may as well showcase their artwork in kind of a bigger format.
And is the trade paperbacks, are they smaller or are they larger?
They're all the same size.
They're all oversized. But I get you. Yeah, the thing I feel as well, Z, is I feel a pressure sometimes. We're all old school comic fans here. And the amount of the sort of, comics seem to come out every other day at the moment, you know.
Yeah,
we've got bi-weekly, and I feel the pressure of getting the next one, and the read pile just sometimes guilts me out. I just look at this long box of other comics, and I like the fact that you can buy them all at once, or you can buy the first issue on Comixology and stuff like that, and there's no pressure. That's what I don't know why. It's just kind of why we on the pod, we read a lot of European books, and they're similar to that, you know.
Yeah.
And we also want to, I mean, the other component of this, and this is a little inside baseball, but or inside comics rather, is, you know, we don't go through Diamond distribution. We distribute directly to retailers, and we do deals directly with comic book stores and independent bookstores. We have a great discount for them, and we do one of the best discounts in the industry. We do 50% off and free shipping within the U.S., and also, you don't have to be on Diamond schedule. So we found early on, and also it's low risk because, I mean, we always tell our retailers, you know, when they put their first order, we say, you know, there's no pressure. I mean, buy as many books as you think you can conservatively sell, and just know that when you sell out, you can get the books back on your shelves in 2 to 5 business days. And so
you don't even use a distributor. You don't use...
No, we have the infrastructure to do it ourselves, so we do everything ourselves.
From a personal point of view, because I work for Nobrail, we use a distributor, but we also network as well. So that's how we kind of do it. It's an interesting world out there, because I think a lot of distributors don't completely understand the comics world sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and I think that for us, we want the comic book store. I mean, listen, I mean, I'll buy stuff off of Amazon in a pinch, but I still like going to the local comic book store and browsing. And I think it's still a huge part of the comic community, if not the most important part. And so we wanted to do something that was good for the retailers. And, you know, our customer service is really fast. We ship really quickly. And the other thing that I think is good for retailers is because we're binge releasing our books, you know, sometimes you walk into a comic book store, you ask the person behind the counter, oh, what's good this week? And they'll, you know, spend some time educating you about a new issue of something from a smaller press.
Yeah.
And if they spend that time doing that with an individual issue, they might only be making $1 on that sale. Whereas if they spend the time doing that with one of our books, they're making the entire collected editions markup, you know, which is, you know, $9 on the trade and $12 on the box set. And so they really, you know, in order to, they're using their time and they're using it efficiently in terms of, you know, making back their money from it.
Yeah. Okay, no matter how clever the algorithms are on Comixology or on Amazon, it doesn't you don't get the quality of finding something new. You don't get the surprise of, oh, this looks interesting, yeah, by pulling it off a shelf, do you? That's the thing.
And I think that there's still a response that you get when you walk. I mean, for somebody like me who's been, and I'm sure you guys who have been collecting since they were young, like when you walk into a comic book store, just even the smell of the comic book store and just like looking at the books on the walls and the expensive back issues that are on the, you know, behind up high. There's just like such a history to it. It's such a pleasant experience. And I have yet to see that even partially replicated via some other way of buying comics.
Yeah, it's like browsing for records and or going to a secondhand bookshop. And, you know, you're not going to find that yet. You know, if you start looking at Amazon, you know.
In terms of distribution, though, obviously it's a non-stop job promoting and getting the word out about, you know, what you're doing in indie comics in general. I think it's just full on all the time. But what is that like for further afield from like the States, you know, like, you know, Australia and, you know, the UK and Europe and stuff? How have you found that sort of interaction?
We've had a lot of retailers in the UK and Spain reaching out. OK Comics has been one of our earliest supporters. Big Bang, all the Forbidden Planets. You know, it seems like there's dozens of them. Early supporters. And, you know, I think that we're looking into foreign language editions right now. Cool. But in the English language world and Spain, for whatever reason, there's we've gotten a lot of support. And some of our biggest orders have been from the UK.
Oh, nice. Good to know. Yeah, your box sets are certainly on the shelf front and center when you walk into the London Forbidden Planet. You walk down the stairs, they're right in front of you. Yeah, that's definitely great.
And like, care has been taken to the way you present your work as well, isn't it? It's not like we're just doing comics and then they're just out there. You know, everything looks polished, doesn't it? There is definitely care there.
Well, one of the things that I kind of miss about when we were younger and when I was collecting comics was just the care that was taken in terms of the presentation and the... We wanted to return comics to feeling like they were collector's items, you know? And that's why we got Jared K. Fletcher does all of our box and cover design. He did the covers for Paper Girls and Southern Bastards. And Paper Girls especially.
Oh, you can see that. Like, I can tell that now you say it. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when Paper Girls first came out, those really strong colors on the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could see them, you know, it could be 25 feet away in the comic book store and you knew
exactly
what they were holding.
And people need to pay more attention to that these days, Z, because that's what makes your arm go out and pick something up, you know, that sort of thing, isn't it?
It was something that we knew that we wanted to spend a lot of time on in terms of the graphic design and the branding.
How does that how does the convention circuit, because have you done many conventions under TKO?
We haven't done a lot of conventions. I think that as we come up with our second wave of books, we'll have enough to kind of fill up a convention table. We've done some testing at smaller conventions just to see, and the reaction has been really good. So we think that next year we'll probably start doing some bigger conventions. Now it's more like...
Are those smaller shows, are they more comic-centric? Or I mean, you can get the multimedia shows, can't you? But are they more sort of indie comics?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really where we want to be as we're starting out, because that's kind of our base. But, you know, I mean, Sebastian and I have been going to conventions more for talent outreach as we're building our third and fourth wave of books. And honestly, it's just really nice to be able to go to a convention now and, like, have anybody know who you are as opposed to...
they'll be queuing up now, won't they? Is that the thing? Yeah.
I mean, it was you know, it was years, you know, a couple of years of that kind of like, wow.
Once you get a business card, it's a game changer.
Do you know what? It really is. Once you get a website, it really is. That's what happened to me. It really is a game changer. Otherwise, you're like the bloke approaching good-looking girls on the boardwalk going, I think you could be a model. You know, it's a bit of that.
Yeah, really, yeah.
We've all done that.
So what does the future... I mean, obviously you've got the incoming, imminent sort of next four titles. And I love the fact that... do you think you're going to stick to the four titles each wave?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that seems to be the number that
a good number,
makes
I think.
Sense for us.
Yeah, yeah.
We think that we may, if anything, we may compress the, because it was 9 months between the first and second wave. We'd like to kind of do 4 books every 6 months. And then we have some hybrid format books that were that are going to be separate from those waves that are coming, that I'll probably announce maybe later on this year. But yeah, I mean,
Why not just announce them now, Z? That's fine with us. If you want to go for it.
And then the third and fourth wave will come out like I think 6 months apart after the second wave.
Yeah.
So it's but we have some really first of all, I'll send you guys the second wave of books, and then also I would love to talk to you guys about the third and fourth wave as well, because I think we'll probably announce those together.
We'd love that. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, you're welcome back anytime. And skillfully avoiding Tony's trying to get you to do an exclusive, by the way. Very well done.
This ain't my first rodeo. I had to pretend I wasn't working on Gremlins for 6 months. Because there were rumors in some podcast they would ask and I'd pretend not to hear the questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
you're thinking. Bad line.
Well, are all the TKO books going to be sort of one and done stories? Is that the sort of game plan?
What we would like is to have we like to have them self-contained, but have the ability to tell a second arc. Whether that's like a direct second arc or more of like a spiritual second arc, I think that there's a lot of ways to do it. So we're certainly open to it. I mean, I think as we were starting out, we wanted to tell a wide breadth of stories, but we certainly are considering sequel versions already, second arcs for all the stories.
Oh, awesome. That's good. Oh, wow. Good to know. I mean, some of these stories may not be able to have a second arc depending on how they end.
Yes.
But you'll just have to read it for yourself.
Yeah.
Always Dark Phoenix them. Be fine. Then come back from the dead.
don't start on that, Tony. That's a whole different ballgame, that is. We love TKO, and you're definitely going to come back on. But in terms of you, what are you reading at the moment? What is exciting you in the sort of comic book world outside of TKO? Yeah.
I really like Brian K. Vaughan stuff. I love Saga. What they're doing with Panel Syndicate, I think, is really super interesting. I'm a big fan of Jason Aaron's stuff. I loved his last thing on The Goddamned. And I'm reading, in terms of non-TKO stuff, I read a lot of, I guess, Image stuff. Some of the creator-owned stuff is really exciting to me. And I'm also going back and collecting some of the Absolute DC stuff. So I have like the Absolute Ronin that I'm reading right now, which is a beautiful reprint.
Has it got the fold out in it? I was curious about this.
It has the fold out. And it's enormous. It's like, it doesn't actually even really fit on my shelf. And do you guys have the Batman Year One Absolute?
Oh, I don't own it.
It's incredible. It has two different volumes. And the first one is the actual reprint of the newsprint. So it's on newsprint paper. Okay. So you can kind of see the original colors. And then the second one is when it was recolored.
That's interesting.
So it's it's a really interesting box set. That was kind of, I think for me, Batman Year One was the first time where I picked up a DC comic where I was like, this is Batman's now like accessible to me. I didn't quite get it before that book.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you find that you got a lot of business after Vertigo closed its doors? Did you find you got access to... I know a lot of creators went searching for new homes, didn't they? Is that something?
I mean, I feel like that's relatively... It feels kind of relatively recent. I mean, I feel I think that a lot of creators are always looking for new places, and I feel that there's... we want to establish ourselves as people who are going to be here for the long haul, we are going to be as present, in the comic book space as any of these imprints. And so
I actually think this is a period now where it will be remembered for the up and coming indie mainstream. Yeah. So we've got like Black Crown, we've got you, we've got Ahoy Comics. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of guys who've, they're taking chances, but they're creating lines of comics, you know, like in the old days when you had like Atlas and all these sort of guys, you know.
I mean, to me, you know, what was really why I wanted to get back into comics was, you know, I was going to the comic book store that we would always have a long lunch at Once Upon a Time when I was writing there. And it's like, I would go walk around because I didn't want to drive anywhere because I'm a terrible driver. So I would walk, and I found myself at House of Secrets in Burbank. And okay. I had kind of not read comics for about 5-6 years. And stepping back into that store and looking at the books, it really truly felt like we are right now in a creative golden age of comics.
Okay.
It's just that the distribution system has not evolved since the 50s
and
60s.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
And we look at the other publishers, and it's like, it's funny because people wonder, like, oh, well, are they competitive with each other? But, like, I'm kind of like, I mean, I know the guys from Vault. Like, when we first started out, we shared a lot of information. And, I really respect the guys from Ahoy. And, you know, even, like, some of the mini majors, like people from the last wave of Valiant, like, when we get together, it's like, when we're getting together, it's really about, like, how do we make comics part of the cultural conversation the way that movies and TV shows and novels are. And we're only in it because we love comics.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's like you're saying, I think it's, we're in this kind of golden age of indie publishers, and I'm really excited to see what happens next.
Yeah. I mean, if comics thrives, everyone wins, really good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
we're
living in, I mean, the whole reason that this show exists, I mean, partly so we can mine people like you for information and figure out how to do our comics, but also, you know, there's so many books out there, so many wonderful books, and we've discovered so much on this show, and therefore it's just pay it forward. Like, you need to check out this book, you need to check out that book, and there's been a lot of people, there's probably people on the show now that haven't picked up a TKO book yet, but when they will, I mean, like we said, you're a drug dealer.
We're addicted now. We're on board. Yeah, I'm buying them all, my friend. Is there anyone on your sort of your wants list who you would be your absolute, you know, you'd want to work with, you know, who would be the one that you haven't got yet? The maybe one writer, one artist who you'd just love to get on board.
I mean, I would love to work with Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. I mean, those two. When I was getting back into comics, I mean, Southern Bastards was really influential.
Such a good run.
So good,
great run. And you know, I think that there's, I would love to work with G. Willow Wilson. And Hope Larson also is somebody that we talked to early on, and I'm a big fan of her books. I feel like within that space, she's got a really interesting voice.
Would you consider humor comics? It seems to be a genre that's not done so
absolutely
much.
You know, and I think that it's, so we're very active on social media, and if you're listening, you know, at TKO Presents is where we are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and one of the things that we do sometimes is we ask, you know, what do you wish that there were more of in terms of what genre would you like to see more comics in? And humor is always one that comes up, and I think it's something that we're looking into. You know, we've talked to some people that we think could be right for something like that. But I think it's an underserved audience, and I think as well.
I think with the closing of the doors at Mad Magazine, I think there's a lot of talent out there.
I think humor, the ones that we hear are humor, sports, which is interesting, and cooking, which I guess is a, you know, say
that is a strangely up and coming genre.
Cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got the Great British Bake Off here, and it ruined our country.
I mean,
oh, interesting.
And a lot of people were like mixing crime and cooking as well. There was an indie book I read recently, which I haven't talked about on the show yet. Short Order Crooks, or something like that. Have you heard of this one?
Really good.
Aspect, like those sort of, you know, the food vans that you get in the US and stuff, and they almost have a like, little community, and there's like ex-criminals working there. Very good book. But cooking.
Cool.
And it's funny that you say sports, because on our last show, one of the questions we had is like, what genres do you think are, you know, underdeveloped? And we talked about sports, didn't we? We talked about sports books.
We've got a grand tradition of sports comics in this country, see, because we you call it soccer, wrongly, obviously. But we've got a lot of football. We used to have like a raft of football comics.
Yeah, that's like British soccer?
Yes. I can't have that. You know what I mean?
He returned your serve there.
But Boy of the Rovers was like selling a million a week or something ridiculous. You know, it's like
cool.
Crazy
massive
stuff.
Numbers.
Yeah. And I think romance comics, we did briefly touch on it. The right sort of book. But obviously, anyone listening to this probably thinking, I'll pitch them. But you're set up for the foreseeable future, aren't you? You've got several waves. If you're doing it in waves, you've got 3 and 4 planned out. So you're pretty set up.
I think that we've certainly had people cold submit or people who know Sebastian or I just kind of reach out. And, you know, I think that early on we wanted to show that we were here to stay and that we were working with some of the top creators and that we were legitimate. But in the third and fourth wave of books, I think that you're going to see that we're putting together now. And we have big creators locked in, but we're also taking some chances on some younger creators who we just really love their books, and some of those were cold submissions.
Amazing.
Oh, nice. Nice work.
Yeah.
Another thing that I like TKO for is on the website, all the creators, and we're talking all the creators here, because sometimes when you go on like Comixology or some website, they will only credit the writer or they'll only credit the artist.
But you have
a page where it says writers, artists, color artists, letterers. Anyone who's had anything to do with these books get their due service, don't they?
Well, they also, we did something that I don't know that I had seen it before, but early on I was like, well, and people put their blood, sweat, and tears into this. So every person on the creative team is on the cover, down to the letterer and the editor. So, you know, we wanted to just make sure that people knew that, you know, it's a trend, right? Where it's like Hollywood Reporter or Deadline will cover a book like, you know, and only talk about the writer. Yeah. And it's like, guys, there's a whole creative team behind this. Like, and so we just wanted to make sure that everybody felt that they were getting the credit that they deserved.
Sometimes when movies are announced and it's just the writer being credited, when all the designs you see on the screen, the writer didn't design those.
Yeah,
it's a group effort.
Yeah.
Writers are generally the better people, though, I'll be honest with you.
Well, me and Dan aren't going to argue because we write our own stuff as well.
A callback to earlier in the episode, I remember in Wizard magazine, you know the photos. I always remember the writers' photos were always like black and white and quite moody. And like the artists were just like a convention floor, like smiling or thumbs up, like a quick snap.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
It's real.
Well, this has been absolutely awesome for the first show.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Absolutely love to have you back.
We love your books, man. Really good.
Thank you so much.
We can't shout about it enough. You need to check this this publisher out, people, because they are putting out great books. And I can't wait for Wave 2. We're going to be front and centre when it comes out. So for those that want to, just again, for anybody who wants to check out the books, whether it be on social media or wherever, just give us some of the links again.
Yeah. You can check us out at tkopresents.com. You can order directly from us or ask your local comic book shop to stock our books. We're in a good number of comic book shops right now, but they can always email sales@tkopresents.com to order us and stock our books. At tkopresents is our social media handle. We're very active on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Follow us for exclusive sneak peeks of artwork and process shots. Thank you for showcasing us, guys.
That's my pleasure. And I will say that the contact and communication from you guys is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
Because this show came about, I just thought, oh, just a shot in the dark. I'll just fire the flare gun and see if anything happens. And you all got back to us straight away. So, you know.
And I ordered a box, the Sarah box from you, and ended up like almost being mates with the guy who was sending it to me. we'd send each other stupid emails. It was absolutely brilliant, man. Yeah, really good. That's what you want. Yeah.
So, thank you very much, Z. It's been absolutely amazing.
Cheers, awesome. Z.
Thank you so much, guys.
Cheers, man.
There you go. Wow.
Nice
wasn't that
stuff.
Good? We awesome. All, as soon as we finished the interview, we were all so tremendously excited about comics.
Yeah. And he stayed on for a bit and had a good chat. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He still won't tell us what he's got planned.
No.
I still tried to get out of him, but he never
asked. Yeah. Master diplomat.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's ever the pro.
Yeah, definitely stay tuned for that publisher because, you know, they're not just coming out with great issue ones and then you never get an issue two. I just love the way they're putting out this work.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think a lot of our listeners will love the stuff that they're putting out, actually. So,
oh, dear. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much to TK and Z for joining us there. But for now, let's just crack on with the rest of this unprofessional mess that we call a show. Do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
We got a few, haven't we?
Yeah.
We do.
I'll go first?
Yeah, go
yes.
first. Heads. There's only 2 days left, 1 day left, as of you listen to this podcast, if you listen to it when it comes out. Heads, Stone Deaf Forever. I'm going to say, I've seen it, Rick's best work so far. Really good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and a really good cover. Just a really, really nicely presented cover. I really like what he's done with that. It sort of tells a story and it's also iconic and... Yeah, good stuff. Go with that one.
Another creator, like, you can track him improving
you really
issue
can.
After issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice work, Rick.
Go to Kickstarter again. You got Heart of Steel, STEAL, by Fraser Campbell and Katie Fleming. It's doing really well, but it's worth backing, and it's on Kickstarter at the moment. I think it went live this week, so have a look at that one. And the other one we've got, did you have any Kickstarter, guys, before we go on to the other one?
I did, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah.
For Mahoney's issue 2, Comedy Meets Comics in a Bar for Supervillains. Rich Carrington's comic. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's a great title. We're doing well. We've got another 17 days to go on that. So check that one out. It's a good comic. Yeah. We've all read it.
Yeah. Oh, I've got another Kickstarter one. Sorry. The Seas, as in the thing at the end of a country, in which is a water. it's Kickstarts lands tomorrow as we record. It's an anthology, experimental anthology, by Yestin Pretigrew. He is the editor of it, and it's got Gareth Hopkins, Dave Crane, Simon Russell, loads of really good people in it. If you go to neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk, you can see a preview. He kindly sent me the issue early, and there's some really great and interesting stuff in it. Yeah.
Hey, Tony, can't wait to see that.
What's that?
What?
Can you put the tumbleweed effect?
I probably should. Because Jesus Christ, that fell hard.
And the other announcement.
I do have one for another. I do have another one for an upcoming Kickstarter. This is a bit of a Kickstarter week this week. But, you know, there's so many great comic Kickstarters out there. So, just pick your favourite is essentially it. But there's one coming up this week from Pete Taylor and Cat Food Comics. Pete Taylor, who I'm going to be talking a bit more about in just a second. But there's an upcoming Kickstarter for The Seven Sagas of Silverbeard. Which is a barbarian silverback gorilla.
Brilliant.
Yeah. What more do you need than that? Someone on this show might be having a pull quote on the Kickstarter itself. But I was privy to seeing the sort of comic as it's looking at the moment. I'll send it forward to you guys, actually, because what I love about this is it's almost building up, like, Silverbeard is... When it says The Seven Sagas, it's a comic that gives you some new tales and also pretends like this is a discovered, you know, comic that's come back from the Bronze Age, that kind of stuff. So there's lots of historical type stuff. And I love all that, you know, building up a universe for something that is imaginary. So successful in doing that, in fact, that I do question whether it's real or not, which I don't think it is, but I'm... but it's going to be awesome. So that's going up later this week. So, keep your eyes out for that. Okay.
Awesome. And to blow my own trumpet and Vince's, that's never happened.
No way.
The is Spark issue 1 is in the works. I'm editing it, and it's an anthology that's coming out of Fair Spark Books. It's got some really great stuff in it, and it's also got me and Vince in it. So we're doing a
pin-ups.
Just announce. You hear? We're doing a sexy pin-up in the back. Just a photo story.
Yeah.
No, we're not. The just announced. Announced yesterday on the Fair Sparks website was Monster Spotters Club, which is a one-page gag story that me and Vince are doing for an all-ages comic. And we're having a blast with it, V, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. It's really good fun. It sort of really energised my sort of creativity. As soon as, like, you guys sort of pitched me the sort of idea you came to me to work about, as soon as I heard about it, my the synapses were firing at all cylinders, and I immediately
I got a load of sketches back and the thumbnails in about 2 hours.
Wow.
There's a lot of people who should pay attention to that, let's face it.
Yeah. And then I designed a logo for it. So
which looks great, man. I love the one with the spacey background. You did a few versions of it because you're a pro. And that one. Go to fairsparkbooks.co.uk and you can see a preview of what's coming up in it. There's a bit of a sort of blog going on about the creative process. We've got quite a few strips in it. A lot of people who you will probably know are in it, and some really great stuff coming out of that book. And I'm really enthusiastic about it. And it's likely to be launched at an upcoming convention that you will hear us talking about soon. So there you go.
Yeah, awesome. I'm very proud and pleased to be part of it. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it's good stuff in it, man. Yeah, it really is good stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, from talking about those great comics to recommending some more comics. Who wants to go first? Tony, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I've got two. I've got two shorter ones, if you don't mind.
Okay. Go for it.
So if I do, I'll bookend this. Yeah. Rise of the Goatman, which I backed literally 3 days ago and arrived through my letterbox yesterday.
That is awesome. That's
pretty good. Yeah. Writer, colorist, letterer, Joseph Oliveira, past guest, good pal. Artist, Adrian Manuel Garcia. Cover artist, Francesco Iaquinta. Really strong cover. I've got to tell you, I really love the cover. Have you seen this cover, guys?
Yeah. This was a book. I think I missed out on backing it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I missed it till the last day.
Yeah. So, because it was definitely... Yeah. I mean, when Joe talked about it when he was on the show, I immediately thought, this sounds like in my wheelhouse. Just... Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, but... it's a kind of one and done. I can see that it could run on. It's the cover is the top half is a sort of the back of this sort of humanoid goat man, you know, with the big sort of broad muscular shoulders and just but it's that old Tarantino looks back over the shoulder shot, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it's just looking back in the middle of it, you've got the central titles running across the center of the page, and underneath it, you've got the sort of shack in the woods kind of effect with a really lovely sort of backlit red light into the woods. Really good stuff. I love a cover that communicates a story and also gives you a vibe and a mood about what's going to happen in it, you know, which this really does. I think it really does. And it's a good choice for a cover. As I say, we were talking about earlier, it's the sort of cover that you see on a shelf and you reach out and pick it up because it's unusual. But sort of creepy and eerie and strange. You know,
well,
sort of
certainly someone picked up the cover at Manchester MCM, didn't they? Did you see this?
Oh, no, I didn't see it.
No. Michael Rooker.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He came over to check out the book.
That's cool, isn't it? How cool is that?
That is great. Yeah.
Yeah. It opens. It's got a really nice opening. As a lot of good openings, it drops you into the story really early. So really in the middle of the action, rather. And it opens on a man taking an angry confession before throwing himself off a chair and killing himself by hanging. Just a nice little prologue, you know, a horror prologue, which you see in these things. And then the scene changes to who you expect and to be the central characters of the story in a family on holiday, mum, dad and the daughter, plus a dog. And they arrive at a wood shack in the woods. The same as the one on the cover, which is a sort of holiday home thing. You know, they're not a well-off family, and this is all they could afford. And they get there, and it looks nice from outside, but it's a bit of a shithole inside.
Yeah.
It smells like something died in here, the daughter says, and you begin to think, right, this ain't going to end well. You know, things get increasingly interesting and creepy. The dog runs off. I always feel really anxious when dogs are in the story. Sometimes, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
when you see a dog in a horror film.
Yeah, I worry about dogs. Yeah. And the dog runs off and finds up a sort of boarded up old barn. And the daughter finds a cellar with a shotgun on the wall. And that's all I'm going to spoil. That's where I'm going to leave it. You obviously expect there to be a goat man in it at some point, and there may or may not be. But it twists and turns really well. It keeps you guessing. I'm not normally a fan of the flashback, but it works well here. It's not just... I always worry that a flashback is filler. Do you remember? You remember in all the sort of Netflix Marvel stories, there was always a flashback episode, wasn't it? And it was always a bit
boring.
It was always dropped in about episode 7, 8, or 9. And I just find it a bit of a filler. But in this one, it's not. It works really well, and it actually is successful in doing what it needs to do. The art works well, adds to the tension. Very sort of heavy black, heavy horror darkness to it. A lot of the story is communicated through facial acting. Joe knows where to pull back from jokes and, you know, exposition and stuff like that. Really good stuff. The artist, Adrian, he pulls it off, which is not an easy thing to do a lot of the time, to apply the facial acting to the narrative enough that it conveys the story. You know, and it's, you see that in a lot of good artists. They you don't need to put words in because you know what the character's thinking.
Yeah.
They don't need to tell you that they're frightened. And he does it. I know there's a couple of moments didn't quite stick for me, but most of it, really good stuff. Joey knows how to write a horror story. He knows how to build the tension. He knows how to work the reaction shots followed by the reveals, which is where a horror sits, isn't it? It's a reaction. You don't always see what is standing in front of the person. You see their face and what they're looking at, and then it flashes onto the horror, you know, or the gore or what it's going to be. And he does that really well. He's got a grasp of horror, really has. If you go to afterlightcomics.com or on Twitter at afterlightcomic, you can get all the details, order a copy. He knows how to run a Kickstarter as well.
Yeah,
he really does. Like I pledged the money and there was a red envelope. I'm like, what's this? I can't remember what's this going to be. And it was the comic, and I thought, wow.
Yeah, the red envelope's nice as well, isn't it? It's just
it is. I like that touch. I really do.
Yeah. It's just those little touches that sort of make it more memorable as well, don't they? And you remember that.
Yeah. And you know that he knows what he's doing with stuff like that. You know that he's got a big box of red envelopes, and that's for this story. And you know.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. Get on it. Get on any comic stories he does, because there's the element of the freakish and the horrific and the memorable, and he doesn't apply himself to all the old tropes. It's good stuff. It'll be a movie. If this was a movie, I'd watch it. And that's I don't really talk about movies.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah. Good stuff. There you go. That's my first one.
Okay, Dan, I know what one you're going to talk about, so take it away.
Yeah, I've got Morgan's Organs, issue 3, Booze Clues. It's a great one. Concept story and letters by Daniel Brody, pencils and inks by Robert Jenks, and colors by Tyler Kelting. The previous two issues have been on the show and are on Comic House. Do you remember the old Numbskulls comic? The characters that live inside of the body. It's very similar setup, but a lot more adult. That sort of meets the in-betweeners, I would say.
Right.
And it's Morgan's birthday. So Morgan and his organs are both having a celebratory drink. And they say, well, we're going to keep this on the low, not go too mad. And they cut to a page where there's all the organs are absolutely fucked, like laying all over the place. There's dicks been drawn on the wall as bongs, just an absolute chaos. And the brain sort of comes out of his stupor after the alarm clock goes off. And the detailing is absolutely fantastic. There's so many bits and bobs worked into the background.
It's the humour as well, which I think is handled really right.
Yeah.
It's the sort of humour that, you know, if people have watched the film Sausage Party, that didn't really work. That felt like that was going for something and didn't really land. Whereas this is how it should be done, isn't it?
Yeah. Because even this one, there's like the brain falls off this heap. And as he's sort of like going down, he's got like a little green mist come out of his bum. So he sort of like the brain kind of charges up to the like the control area and finds out like the night before is a total blank, all the data has been corrupt, and from that on in the issue he has to try and go around the body and work out what's happened and what's happened to Morgan, because he's got like a black eye and all the shit's gone on to him. And it's a really interesting little story. Yeah, I have to find out the details. We'll put it in the show notes where to get it from, because I backed it on the Kickstarter. But it's a really fun read. If you like the first two, you like this.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, good quality stuff.
All right, my pick is from the creator Pete Taylor, who I just mentioned just a minute ago. But he also co-wrote this with Adam Wilmot. This is Monster Kids. I've got two books here, and they're both sort of A5 sort of landscape sort of... you know how my Stalkerville book kind of was? Now Monster Kids was I didn't know this until I saw it at the back page. It was originally serialized in volume 20 of Aces Weekly, which we've talked about. Which is that's just an online, is that, that's not a printed thing, is it? That's online.
I don't think it is, man. No, I think it's just online.
So they collected together these strips and just printed them up in two really nice little books, actually. You know, they're not hugely thick books, but you know, quick reads. And basically it's all ages sort of strips about a group of monster kids. You know, they're different sort of kids just going to a school, and like it harkens back to those sort of, you know, the Bash Street Kids, if done through a sort of I would say Scream, but that was a little bit darker. It had that sort of energy of like the cartoons of like Count Duckula, and though you know when cartoons used to do some things with monsters and stuff like that, you know, and a little bit sort of Adam's Family kind of vibe about it.
Okay,
you know, there's a colourful array of characters like Ivy and Luna, who had like two twin sisters who were apparently they like crowbars, taxidermy, and poison tea parties. Well, nice. There's like a Cthulhu-like kid. There's a basically a sort of swamp sort of monster child who's called Pete, which is spelled P-E-A-T, which I thought was brilliant. there's Eugene, who's like a little chubby vampire, and Ray, who's like a skeleton. And it's just their sort of adventures. This little book's called Show and Yell, where they've basically got to bring something to school, and it all goes horribly wrong. And it's a lovely little story. The art's wonderful as well. And it's just properly good fun. It is a quick read, but Pete packs in quite a lot in all of the pages, like lots of little details. The colour's nice. I think the characters are fit for like fan art as well. Okay. I love this sort of stuff. But another thing that came with it when I bought the two is The Secret History of Monster Kids. Similar sort of size format. But what the guys have done in this, and it was something that I saw in the Silverbeard sort of work in progress, it's treating the monster kids as if they've had a history through the through comics, and like there's artwork through it, like there's pages that look like the cover of Archie, you know, they're done in that sort of Archie style. Here they are when they were in Gravedale, and then it moves on to there's like Charles Schulz sort of monster kids versions.
Oh, nice.
All
touch.
Way through it, you know, you've got like Calvin and Hobbes styles and Garfield, and it's just really fun. There's a little sort of pin up in the back where the monster kids meet Hellboy as well at the back. You know, that's a nice little added extra. You could just read Show and Yell by itself, but this little book as well, which I thought, oh, what is this, but just reading it, it almost added a new dimension to it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a creator who's been around for a while, but this I discovered his work properly at BAM in Bath when he came to Bath. And he's a creator that's definitely going to be on the show, because you can tell it's someone that just, as he said to me when we had a chat, he goes, you know, when it comes to shows, I'm not too fussed about selling things. I just want to talk to people about comics. And I thought, right, you're a good man.
Yeah, that's the attitude we need, my friend. Yeah. You'll never be disappointed.
Yeah, and he's also got quite a bit of history. You can tell this is someone who knows their comics history, so I think he'll have a fascinating conversation with Tony Esmond as well. So, that aside, I think the books he's putting out is really good. So Cat Food Comics is his work. Let's have a look. Where's the links at the back of the book? You can find Adam on Facebook at Adam Wilmot, but you can find Pete on Instagram and Twitter at This Man This Pete. and a side note, £1 from the sale of each of the comics is donated to Dementia UK, which is brilliant as well. So that's another reason just to get it. So that's my one.
Cool. Just got one more from me. Americana and the Act of Getting Over It. Out of Nobrow, God bless us, by Luke Healy, a favourite creator of mine, a really good guy. And he's a sort of improv stand-up as well. You ever get a chance to watch a panel with him? I did a panel with him, and we had a blast. So this is his new book, $16.99, 336 pages, softcover book. And it's basically an autobiographical book about him walking the Pacific Crest Trail. Do you know what that is?
No.
So it's basically one side of America, 2,660 miles.
Jesus.
Did
you say walked it?
Yeah. And from California's border to Mexico to Washington's border with Canada. It's a grueling test of body and spirit, we say on the website, which it is. But it's funny as well. It's interesting and poignant and intimate and fascinating and really, really personal. But done with Luke's real sort of trademark sense of humor. There's a couple of bits in it you'll go, oh my god. There's a couple of bits in it that will make you smile. There's a couple of bits in it that will make you wince. There's one moment where he has to go to hospital with something, let's call an embarrassing ailment, which is just like, I remember this book came in and the pitch came in and Sam at Nobrow said to me, you got to read this, man. This is like the best thing. And everyone was so enthusiastic about it. 336 pages, and you will be absolutely glued to it. I've got some preview copies. It comes out on the 18th of August, For sale. You can pre-order it through the website at the moment. But anything by this guy, get on board. It's just brilliant stuff. Go to nobrow.net and you can pre-order it. Yeah, that's my second one. Really good.
Amazing. So many great books to check out this week. Sometimes I go, I've got a lot of show notes to do, but it's always a joy putting links to comics. So check out the show notes for any show, or just Google. If we talk about a title, just Google it and find out more about it, because you won't be disappointed, because we love all these books. That's why it's called Recommendations, because we love them.
Yeah.
So we hope you enjoyed this episode. And and if you've got any questions or would like to know more about anything that we talked about this week, or maybe we just got something wrong. Maybe I don't think we didn't do anything wrong this week, did we?
It wasn't as bad as last week. Last week we were a bit off the rails.
A little bit. And we didn't get an email about that, which I was quite surprised.
Yeah, we were quite surprised, Cyclops. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
I think we've lost all those listeners that get easily offended.
And welcome to all the new listeners from the TKO website.
Yeah.
Yes.
We apologise.
If you're going to listen to us on the regular, then you're in for quite a ride.
Should we give them a hint about what we've got coming up in August?
I was just about to do... Should we do that before I do the links? Yeah, why? Why the hell not? What we're doing for the next sort of 5 weeks of shows after this one, it was going to be like 4 weeks of shows, but then we added another one. Because what we want to do, we're going to be going through the process of making comics. I know we, you know, people like process shows and like, you know, talking about how the sausage is made, as it were. But rather than just talk about a certain thing, we almost want to take it not step by step. It's not a how to, because most of you people out there, you don't need to be told how to make comics. Everyone's got their own way of doing it.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to focus like a light on a different area of comics each week. So we're starting with writing, which is next week's show.
Very excited about that. Cough, cough. He might have written the X-Men.
Yep. Mm. Yep. We're gonna have sort of guests on for the show. These are gonna be new voices.
Yeah.
Each time, to talk about the process, and you'll get a bit about their work as well, obviously, because that's how you get the best information.
The beast.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to start off with writing. That will be the first one. Then we're going to artwork. Then there's going to be colouring, lettering, and then the finished product. Now, we've got stuff lined up for each one of them. And I know some of you are probably saying, but what about editing, or what about this, or what about that?
Yeah.
Look, you don't know what we're going to cover in the episodes yet, so just hold your horses. Yeah. And whatever we don't cover, we'll probably pick up in a future show anyway. You know what we're like.
You always think our audience are quite adversarial against us, don't you, Vince?
I think it's just the way you two are with me each week. Yeah. No, we love you people, and you know it. So, and thank you for all your support, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. So look forward to those few shows, because we're getting quite excited about getting stuck into like some comic talk.
Yeah,
like
I love process shows. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So the guy we've got on, we won't spoil it, but the guy we got on next week is a really experienced writer.
Yeah,
and one of my favourite people I've spoken to at conventions. Really, really clever guy. Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, so look forward to that one. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. But this week as well was fantastic, and hopefully very interesting for you, lovely people. So let us know what you think about the show or what we got upcoming. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we will be posting up who the guests are going to be for these individual shows and when we're going to do them. We're going to record most of these shows a little earlier than usual. We sometimes, when we put a shout out to questions, we don't get them until after the show is recorded.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We might put a shout out for some questions, mightn't we?
I think so.
Yeah.
But you'll have to be quick about it. But follow us on Twitter. If you do Facebook, God bless you. But facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast is the page to go. And if you do group chat or community chat or anything, then join the group Awesome Comics Talk, because we talk about it every week. It's a great group of people. Gareth Slightholm gave a good shout to the community that happens on that.
Yeah.
When he was on the BBC, did you know?
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. But you know, he wouldn't have shouted about it if the community wasn't fantastic, and that's all the great people that are on Awesome Comics Talk, so go and join it. And also, we're the administrators, so we won't let any nonsense slip by.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Apart from our nonsense.
Yeah, apart from our nonsense. We're the only shameless self-promotional people around here. But thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. You can leave us a review on iTunes if you listen to us there. Subscribe. Helps get the word out and more people find out about great comics and stuff. We haven't had an iTunes review. Well, we haven't had many reviews recently, have we? Not that we
No.
Not that we
no,
want
I
them.
Think we've only had a couple this year, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. But not that we want them, but we want them. We want them. And if you listen to us on any of the networks, for instance, like Stitcher, Spotify, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
I thought I was giving a shout out again to the old network of Pod Earwin. You've come in my eyes.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We were doing so well. This was going so smoothly. Although,
I told you that one was coming.
I've got to say, it's one of my faves.
One little bit of advice for listeners, don't buy Spider-Man fucking trading cards at your local newsagents. They're a pile of shite.
I think pictures
of the one I bought earlier, they're written in Polish.
Yeah. I will say that, I mean, I don't follow it, I follow the world of it, but I think trading cards have gone down in quality since I was...
They have, yeah. Yeah, they have.
I'm expecting some blowback from that, but yeah. What do you think, Dan? Because, you know, Dexter gets trading cards and stuff, doesn't he?
He's mainly into the Pokemon stuff.
Ah, well, I mean, that's kind of an evergreen sort of license, that, isn't it? So, yeah, I don't count them. But
you don't get much of any of the other ones.
No.
Crap.
Oh. Might go down and get some Ukrainian Batman trading cards from the newsagent.
I was buying a Twix and I thought, I'll buy these as well.
Yeah.
My local shop. And they're all like,
What did you think you were going to get in them, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. I like to buy the odd one. Just I've been buying trading cards since the original Star Wars and stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
a little memory of the movie, but it's just like I'll put them up on the group and everyone can have a look, see how bad they are.
Oh, right.
How much do they cost?
I can't really remember, to be fair. Not much.
Going back in the day, I remember a pack of Garbage Pail Kids was like 20p and you got the cards and a bit of horrible bubble gum in it.
Yeah. Yeah, but you only got one card in those, wasn't it? It wasn't like those.
No, I think it was five cards.
No,
they were quite smart, though.
No, you never. You never win the Garbage Pail Kids. You never got.
I'm sure you got.
Calm down. All right.
Look, we're debating. We're not arguing.
Just Googling how many cards you used to get in the Garbage Pail Kids. Yeah, of course you are. Of course you fucking are.
And that was Excuse of the Week, number 189. Right, so we're going to sign off now and argue about trading cards some more. But before we do that, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk or SOSEZOHYZ on Twitter. There you go.
Nice. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can be Vanguard at VanguardComic.com, or it's all on Comic House.
Nice. Oh, look at you, smooth. You can find me on Instagram, at Twitter, at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. And go forth and check out TKO, because we think
nice
you
geezer.
We'd love
to hear your feedback on those first issues up there.
Let's start a chat on the group about that.
That'd be great. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. Go forth, read loads of comics, have a great week, and from Dan, Tony and myself, read loads of comics, and what else do they do? Who wants to take over this week? What do they do?
Stay awesome.
Yes.
As always.
Yes.
Stay fucking awesome.
Tony, stop grubbling. Say something positive. Say something positive for our listeners to go forth and enjoy their week with. Go on.
I'm aroused.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.